Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:14 p.m. the Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 3rd. The Nasdaq popped on the upside in here today, but paired the advance into the close. So now the question is, are we going to see an additional pop on the upside tomorrow, or is it going to come straight back down again? Because this is quite similar to the move we saw in June. And when we then think about, well, what is the animating factor behind this extraordinary move that we've had today, where the Nasdaq was down almost 5%, and the declines that we saw were perhaps presaged yesterday by the decline that we saw in Apple and Tesla and Nvidia. And those shares were among the leading decliners in here today. Tesla, for example, has pulled back by nearly 20% this week, but it is at least still holding the $400 area. And then when we think about Apple, well, there's an awful lot of good news has been priced in, and it was down in a dynamic manner today and pretty much closing on the low of the day as well. So it does suggest that we now have a peak of at least near-term significance. We had an outside day yesterday, followed through on the downside today. When we look at it on a weekly chart, it stands out, not only because of the spectacular acceleration to get up to these levels, but also because of the weekly key reversal that is currently developing. So the big question then is, what happens tomorrow? It's the last day of the week, and it's a question that I think everyone is going to be asking. So then the bigger question is, well, what could be the contributing factor here? I did think that there was an interesting story on Bloomberg today. It was to the effect that when the Nasdaq rallies for more than 100 days above its 50-day moving average, then it is liable to pull back. And, well, it's about 100 days since it popped back above its 50-day moving average. And we have a very wide overextension relative to the trend mean, so there is the clear potential that we're going to have some additional pause and consolidation. One thing that I did think was interesting in here today is that the resources sector also pulled back, but not for any particular reason, other than the fact that when you think about the size of the market and the influence that a small number of very large cap technology companies play, and the way that that feeds through into the returns of ETFs, that when people want to take profits on ETFs or on options, then it represents a very significant sell signal, and that affects the entire stock market. So I think one of the things to pay attention to over coming days will be the ability of the market to rebound, and perhaps not specifically the technology sector, but other sectors. I thought that this graphic was also particularly interesting because it highlights the fact that there are very few occasions when the stock market and the VIX can rally together, and it was doing that earlier this week. The only other times we've seen that happen in the last 25 years has been ahead of the peak in 2000. And of course, that was also marked by incredible speculative interest. The big question and is really more about interest rates than anything else. When we look at the yield curve spread, it contracted meaningfully in here today. It's been ranging between about 35 and 70 basis points for the last 6 months, and it's coming back down from the upper side of the range. U.S. 10-year Treasury yields have been contracting for the last four consecutive days, and they were a little off the low on the close today, but they're not surging higher. The only thing that could really derail the ability of the market to continue to expand asset prices would be a clear question about the sustainability of the liquidity-fueled environment. Well, it's quite likely that if there were any real pressure on upward pressure on yields, then that would spur the Fed to act. Right now, the market is behaving as if we have yield curve control already, and it may yet need to be tested as to whether are to find out exactly how far the Federal Reserve is going to let things go before they intervene. But we have got very wide overextensions relative to the trend mean evident on a substantial number of shares. It's not necessarily just the FANG shares, but it's also acutely evident in the semiconductors. I was highlighting the semiconductors yesterday because they had continued to push on the upside, but this is looking like a failed upside break on advanced micro devices, and it is really $28 overextended relative to the trend mean, which really is a very wide overextension. So we could quite easily see some pause and consolidation right across the technology sector. And part of the reason for all of this is not so much about interest rates, but more about the fact that the CDC in the USA is talking about it's talking to states about how to roll out vaccines. It's talking about the potential for rolling out a vaccine in October. Well, if the valuation of a company is predicated on everybody staying at home indefinitely, then that's rather unlikely. Zoom Media is a good example of that. The company has done spectacularly well since March. It going from 100 to nearly 500 is a really quite stratospheric move. But how many people are going to be forced to continue to use Zoom when all of this is over? If we see vaccines getting rolled out from October and a substantial number of people being inoculated within the next 6 months, then schools are going to be back in session. One of the reasons I'm so negative about Zoom is because I've been on a number of calls and reception is grainy at the best. And then I watch my children on Zoom calls for school, and it is make-believe learning. I can't see that they're learning anything at all. And it just really seems to be that they spend most of their time absolutely bored senseless. And this just is in no way a reflection on the ability of when you look at the kinds of products that educational institutions are picking up for dedicated at-home learning, then companies like 2U did rather well from that up to 2018, and then they got overtaken by Zoom. But at least these kinds of MOOCs like Coursera or Udacity are providing structured environments where people can learn on their own. These kinds of Zoom meetings are completely unstructured and require just an enormous amount of time to deal with kids in the class. And while one person is being dealt with, the rest of them are doing nothing at all. It just does not seem to be a productive use of anybody's time. So people are going to flood back into structured environments for various activities. I've been working from home for nearly 14 years. Not every couple is capable of spending every moment of every day with one another. And certainly it takes some getting used to. There is the reality for many people that relationships survive because they don't spend all their time together. And a lot of couples value their time apart and their independence as well. So that's obviously going to be an additional factor that's going to push people back into the workplace. And if we've seen the front loading of sales for all of these cloud companies and software as a service companies, then they are susceptible to some pause and consolidation at a minimum. So the cloud computing ETF was also in negative territory today. But it is worth reminding ourselves that when we look at the consistency of the trend, there has been the series of ranges, one above another. And they are still one above another. And if we get a rebound tomorrow, well, then this is still an uptrend. So even though we've had downward dynamics, they are a warning shot across the bow. They quite likely represent a pause in the advance, at least a near-term peak. They could represent a medium-term peak, but we would need to see further trend deterioration to confirm that. But what does look likely is that there is clear evidence of rotation. It was already starting in August, and this downward dynamic is likely to, enhance that argument. When, for example, we look at some of the cruise companies, they were among the best performing shares in here today, and it does not look like much on the daily chart because of the size of the pullback, but they were up in a meaningful fashion in here today. Marriott, among the hotels, and the hotels generally, were also up in positive territory, but they haven't yet been able to sustain a move back above the trend mean. Then when we look at some of the providers, or the companies that depend heavily on the hospitality and restaurant sector, they're also right in the region of the trend mean. Cisco is, I think, a good barometer of the health of that particular sector. It's also a dividend aristocrat. There is, I think, the potential that we're going to get a rotation into some of these types of names. But of course, we've had a very spectacular advance. Now the big question is, are we going to continue to see this massive amount of stimulus provided if the urgent requirement for it ebbs? That's the big question in the minds of investors. That's probably the primary catalyst for the pullback that we've seen. And of course, it's also in response to this incredibly speculative advance, which has seen call buying get up to historic highs. So that has been an also a really quite a big factor in the pullback that we've seen in here today. Now, oil prices had pulled back in early trading, but then recouped most of it. We have seen a substantial amount of supply taken out of the market. With Hurricane Laura, about 3 million barrels have been taken out of supply from U.S. production. And then if we do have a series of recovering economies, and not least as the potential for rollouts of vaccines starts to ramp up, then the excess supply of oil is likely to balance out really quite quickly. So I wouldn't be willing to quite write off the potential for oil to continue to rally from here. Of course, when we think about speculative flows, then gold prices had rallied really extremely impressively between June and July. We're still in a process of consolidation. Silver prices were down a bit more than gold in here today. And I think then it's also worth considering that when we look at the gold-silver ratio, it had done spectacularly well. But now we're starting to see that, particularly since the beginning of August, silver's outperformance relative to gold has paused. I've been very clear in stating that when silver begins to outperform relative to gold, it generally outperforms for the duration of the bull market, but it doesn't do it in a straight line. And there is the clear potential here that we're going to get a period of time where silver underperforms for a while. And also, something that was repeated on a number of occasions during the big bull market for gold was that we do get these ranges, and we get these rather inert periods of trading, and they lull investors into a false sense of security. Then we get an additional bout of volatility. It closes the overextension relative to the trend mean in a swift manner, And that sets up the stage for the next push on the upside. While we have not had an additional bout of volatility in gold yet, the $1,900 area is still holding and doing so rather admirably. But it can't be ruled out either. And I have been putting in, or I did yesterday anyway, put in bids below the market in just in anticipation of the potential outcome that we may see an additional drop before we get a rebound. It's just the kind of volatility that we get in gold hasn't been banished by the fact that we've had an impressive breakout. Then, when we think about the gold shares, well, they were also in negative territory today, but again, not in a dynamic manner. So, what this also helps to tell us is that this is not where the big speculative interest was. Even though we've had a clear move to outperformance by gold shares, and they have rallied impressively since the lows back in March, this has not been where we've seen the big accelerations. Acceleration is a trend ending, and these downward dynamics do suggest that peaks of near-term significance have been reached. Whether they are peaks of medium-term significance yet has yet to be seen, but it does suggest that we're going to see a period of underperformance by the stay-at-home index for a while. And then, when we think about the rest of the world, well, the dollar index was in fact in negative territory in here today. So it is still holding that sequence of lower rally highs. It hasn't quite been able to break it yet. When we then think, just turn it the other way around and look at the euro, the Europeans are beginning to talk the euro down, and they successfully did that for 3 days, but it's still holding its sequence of higher reaction lows. Europe is just not nearly as active as the USA is in printing its currency, and that excess supply of dollars flowing out into the world is supporting the downtrend in the dollar and the advance of other currencies. So the Australian dollar was in negative territory today, taking its lead from some of the weakness that we've seen in the commodity complex and also the increasing spat between Australia and China and China's efforts to influence Australian government policy. They obviously don't know who they're dealing with, but that's rather beside the point at the moment. The Australian dollar is unwinding, partially at least, its overbought condition, but it's still holding the sequence of higher reaction lows, and that sequence has been rivetingly consistent since the low back in March. Really, a sustained move back below the trend mean would be required to question the uptrend in the Australian dollar. And Australia is dealing with its first recession in decades. They have already cut interest rates to historic lows. They've got more room to cut further than other countries do. And they have the potential to engage in quantitative easing, which is a new departure for Australia. So there's plenty of scope for additional supply of liquidity into the market. And as long as the Aussie dollar is continuing to advance, then I think investors will be willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. When we think about the Australian ASX 200, it was in positive territory today, I think quite likely to be in negative territory tomorrow. So it hasn't quite been able to push back above the trend mean just yet. There are obviously a lot of questions on the minds of investors. We've had a spectacular move in Wall Street, and it does look increasingly likely that's in for a pause. There will be pockets of outperformance in other assets, but I think we do need to start thinking about the ramifications of a recovery scenario and the potential for synchronized global economic expansion in 2021, probably beginning later in the year. And that is likely to be beneficial for commodities. The commodity complex was, I guess, perhaps the more correct way of saying it is that the liquid portion of the commodity complex was in negative territory today. But then, when we think about the illiquid portion, such as the iron ore market, then it was barely affected. today. So obviously there is a lot of demand for commodities coming out of China. Their economy is furthest along in terms of opening up and getting back into the normal swing of things, particularly from an industrial perspective. And they've been able to do that because they've quarantined their entire workforce inside factories, so then people can still work without the risk of contracting the disease. Those kinds of extreme measures have contributed to demand for commodities. I guess there is the additional potential that they are stockpiling key commodities because of increasing geopolitical tensions, which would make sense for a forward-looking administration like they have in China. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.